From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, psychic Anthony Carr joins us. We'll talk about lots of things, including the life of Harry Houdini. Here's what's happening. The head of the FBI said that the government had purchased a tool enabling investigators to access an iPhone belonging to that San Bernardino gunman, Syed Farouk. The disclosure by James Comey in a speech at Ohio's Kenyon College was a departure from previous official statements, which had been vague in explaining these details of how the government broke into the phone last month. Now, the Justice Department had only said that a third party had demonstrated an alternative method of unlocking the device to the FBI the evening before the federal prosecutors filed a motion to delay a court hearing on that matter. ISIS-affiliated militants capturing more than 300 workers and contractors at a cement factory in Syria. At last word, they still have them as hostage. Let's check in with Dr. Jerome Corsi, of course, Ph.D., author of many books, including Who Really Killed Kennedy, and, of course, writes for WND.com. We haven't heard a lot about ISIS lately, Jerry. How come?
Well, it's still very active in the Middle East and very dangerous. There's a lot not being reported, George. You know, there was reports that the Russians have pulled out. I think the Russians have just moved in a new series of night attack helicopters that are going after ISIS targets. ISIS is on the move, as this kidnapping outside Damascus shows. ISIS is still very dangerous. And it's constantly going, you know, there's constant fighting throughout Iraq with Iran trying to take over ISIS headquarters and strongholds. But recently, I'd say in the last few days, certainly in the United States, the presidential election has dominated the news. We're hearing very little from the Middle East, but it doesn't mean it's particularly quiet.
Well, Jerry, let's keep checking in on this situation, because I have a feeling it's going to get out of hand again. Indonesian pop singer Irma Buell died this week after being bitten by a snake used as an onstage prop during a live performance. 45 minutes after the bite took place, because she stepped on the snake, the performance was abandoned as Buell started vomiting and collapsed. She was subsequently taken to a hospital where she was later confirmed to have died. Wow. Now, this is a strange story. It's published in the New York Post, but originally in The Sun. And it talks about a newly discovered planet, which is true, but they say, could it destroy Earth any day now? And this is how the story goes, and we've got it at coasttocoastam.com under the highlight reel. A mysterious planet that wiped out life on Earth millions of years ago could do it again, according to a top space scientist. Some believe that the event could happen as early as this month. It's called Planet 9, a new planet discovered at the edge of the solar system back a few months ago. It has triggered comet showers that bomb the Earth's surface, killing all life, says Daniel Whitmire of the University of Louisiana. I checked into him. He's real. The astrophysicist says the planet has a 20,000-year orbit around the sun, and its closest point to us knocks asteroids and comets toward the Earth. Fossil evidence, they say, has suggested that most life on Earth is mysteriously wiped out every 26 to 27 million years. Whitmire claims that Planet 9's passage through a rock-laden area called the Kuiper Belt is responsible for the extinction events. Now, we've been trying to get a hold of him. He's been unavailable lately. Now, those people who believe in the work of Zechariah Sitchin, this almost sounds identical, except Sitchin said the orbit was 3,600 years, not 20,000 years around the sun. But we'll keep checking out that story. Wow. Also, another story at coasttocoastam.com. Google Earth footage apparently capturing a crashed flying saucer in the middle of the mountains. The strange pictures show a large circular-shaped craft in the middle of nowhere, which some believe to be a sign of alien life on Earth. A video recorded by Google Earth cameras appears to have captured what some viewers believe to be a crashed flying saucer in an Arizona mountain range. Go take a look at that story at coasttocoastam.com. And of course, when you want UFO reports, you check in with none other than Peter Davenport from the National UFO Reporting Center. Peter, what do you got this week?
Well, good evening, George. Boy, if that planet's coming back, I'm going to get partying this weekend.
You might as well.
It has been a wild week, George.
Really? It was quiet last week. What's going on?
Yeah, well, you may recall, and I'm sure many of our Coast listeners recall, last week I signed off with a report from Salt Lake City. A gentleman, age 74, saw, he estimates, 70 to 80 white objects, tiny white objects in a clear blue sky. They started strobing in synchrony with one another, and then suddenly all instantly just disappeared. Well, I mention that case again because I've had three similar reports over the last 6 days. First one from Johannesburg, South Africa. This one comes from Easter Sunday, the 27th of March. He was going to bed. It was 9:29 p.m. local time in South Africa. He made a specific note of the time. He was admiring the constellation, very distinctive constellation Orion in the southwest sky, and admiring the star Sirius just to the left of it. I hear about that star every night, actually. And he suddenly became aware of what he estimates was a string of coppery orange objects, about 20 to 30 of them, split in two separate groups. He saw these objects, he reports, for only about 10 to 15 seconds. They streaked across the night sky, going, I believe, from east to west. We'll have that report posted as soon as our webmaster gets back from Ohio. But very, very interesting, high-quality report, well-written, and I suspect the witness is very highly reliable. 2 days later, similar report from Aurora, Colorado, George. Gentleman was standing outside admiring a beautifully blue, clear sky. He heard what he identified as a jet fighter streaking overhead. He's like me. He's had to scan to see the aircraft. Mm-hmm. I can't hear an aircraft and not scan for it and admire it. As he was scanning for the aircraft, his attention was drawn to, he estimates, seven white triangular objects in a very, very tight formation streaking across the sky from south to north. He lives very close to Buckley Air Force Base, he writes, and he estimates that those objects went right over Buckley Air Force Base at the time that jet fighter was in the air. He adds that he doesn't think the jet fighter was pursuing those objects, but it makes you wonder whether that pilot might have witnessed those objects. We'll never know, even if he did, of course. The next day, actually 2 days later, April 1st, just about the time I was preparing to do my report last week, very dramatic sighting in Olympia, Washington. I've turned it over to Jim Clarkson, the MUFON state director. Perfect. For Washington, to have him look into it and interview the guy. I've talked to the witness, very solid guy, and he saw a very peculiar object coming down out of the nighttime sky. At first, he thought it was a meteor, and very quickly, it stopped as it was coming down at about a 45-degree angle and came to a complete stop. Four white objects, he writes, came out of the bottom of it. I mention this case, George, because the witness sounds to me to be very solid, and less than 15 minutes later, two women whom I know out here in eastern Washington saw a white light that was wobbling its way across the night sky, Friday night, the 1st of April, again. And suddenly it just shot down like a marble coming out of a slingshot. You have to wonder whether those two reports might be related. We'll have them posted as soon as our webmaster gets back this weekend. And finally, very, very interesting sighting 2 nights ago from downtown Phoenix. A gentleman was standing outside in north central downtown Phoenix, looking to the south, and he saw a green object come streaking almost vertically, he estimates, out of the night sky. And he sort of braced for a collision. He thought it was a nearby meteor. Suddenly, the object slowed, and it turned abruptly to the west, that is, to his right, and shot off into the night sky. He sat there stunned. About 2 or 3 seconds later, he writes, a second one followed the first. A lot of very, very interesting things going on. These should be posted to our website sometime over the weekend.
You got it, Peter. Great reports. Great job at the National UFO Reporting Center's website, of course, UFOCenter.com. Up next, just how far will terrorists go to try to destroy us? Scott Portzline joins us. He's back on Coast to Coast AM. We'll talk about that. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie. What you're about to hear could be one of the most frightening things you've ever heard in your life. For 30-plus years, Scott Portzline has researched the issue of sabotage and terrorism of nuclear power plants. His research has been recognized by the U.S. Department of Energy, the Department of Homeland Security, and various military branches. He has researched more than 40,000 pages of documents. That's a lot, folks, on the Three Mile Island core meltdown, from the National Archives and other public document rooms as well. And that's what we're talking about tonight with him for the first couple hours on Coast to Coast. And Scott, welcome back.
Thank you, George. It's a pleasure to be with you and your listeners.
I cannot think of a better time to have you on to talk about these dangerous possibilities that are out there. I mean, I really just can't comprehend the danger of all this. Scott, you know, when you hear the whack job in North Korea talking about what he's doing, and then the terrorists attempting to do what they're doing, what a time, isn't it?
Yeah, it's getting very frightening because it seems, I've been watching this for 30 years, and in 1993 I became concerned enough to go public with my concerns. That was because the World Trade Center bombers threatened to attack nuclear facilities, and they trained 30 miles from my house here near Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. But, you know, of all the times, like you're saying, this seems to be closer to than ever to having some sort of nuclear attack, whether it be a dirty bomb or a nuclear plant. Who knows?
Let's take a little bit of time just to talk about North Korea for a moment, Scott. I know your expertise is on these power plants. But, I mean, what are we going to do with a guy who sets up a policy of sending out videos showing what it's like to nuke America and keeps up with this rhetoric? I mean, is the guy insane or what?
I would say he's unstable. I don't think he's insane, but I tell you that people at the Nuclear Regulatory Commission told me years ago, of all the countries they worried about the most, it was North Korea. And I don't know what he's trying to do to scare South Korea, scare the United States, but they are prepared to go to war, and if it's nuclear, they just might launch a nuclear attack on South Korea or even Japan.
How far can his missiles go, Scott? Do you know?
Well, if he was lucky, it could hit the Aleutian Islands in Alaska. It would not be able to hit Hawaii, but there's plenty of territory nearby North Korea where he's threatening millions and millions of people. They could hit Japan. There's a question of accuracy, and there's also doubt about how large of a nuclear weapon they could put in one of their missiles because they don't have the lifting power, and they don't have the miniaturization of the warhead.
And what about a defense system on our end? I mean, do we have anything that is in that area that would rapidly shoot down a missile?
We do have some Patriot missiles that we could use. Other than that, I'm not familiar with the military has for its latest technologies. You know, if they did bring a missile in on a fishing vessel of some sort, then that would be a surprise attack, maybe from off the coast of another country, including ours.
No, that's right. That's another danger, too. So here's the big question. Why is a nation like North Korea that should be negotiating and working things out and, you know, trying to create peace, Why are they talking about devastation and using nukes? I mean, if this is a poker game, it's a bad hand to play.
Yeah, it's like pouring gasoline in your yard, and your neighbor pours gasoline in his yard, and you stand there with a book of matches saying, I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it. Well, eventually it just might scare the other neighbor into going first. So he, you know, their leader might do that even against South Korea. But we are relying heavily upon the Chinese to bring him under control, and let's hope they can do that.
They're not doing a very good job of it yet.
Not when you start making videos of what it would be like.
No, not at all. I'm also thinking, what are the possibilities of a military coup there? I mean, there's no doubt that he's killed off some of his generals, some of them because, one, they fall asleep during a meeting. Maybe the guy had narcolepsy or something, and he's killed his uncle for some heinous reason. Then he kills their families because he doesn't want any next of kin to come back at him. At what point does the military develop a coup and get him out of there?
Well, I wish it would happen. This is the worst episode of The Twilight Zone with Bill Mumy having the powers to wish people into the cornfield.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, so now we've got him to worry about. We've got the Iranians to worry about somewhat. And now we have terrorism, where there's some concern. The president says he's concerned that they could get a dirty bomb or a nuke. And, of course, you've been looking at the power plants and the possibility that those could get hit. What's going on right now worldwide with nuclear power plants?
Well, the latest concern, of course, is with the Belgium nuclear facilities. And they have a reason to worry because there's been drones launched over the French and Belgium nuclear plants, possibly doing surveillance. These are sophisticated drones, and no one knows who has been putting these up. So I have a hard time believing that the French authorities can't capture one of these or shoot one down. They did detain some protesters from Greenpeace, but they had nothing to do with any of the drones. So then when you combine it with the video that was found from the Paris bombers, we now know that they were watching one of the chief nuclear officers for a isotopes facility in Belgium, where they make these dangerous radioactive isotopes, and they were surveilling his movements, and they were thinking they're either going to hold him hostage to gain access to radioactive materials, or they're going to do some sort of extortion event. We know that there was a saboteur that disabled the turbine and caused millions of dollars in damage at the Belgian Doel nuclear plant that's in northern Belgium, about 15 miles from Antwerp. He opened a valve on a oil facility tanks, and it kept the turbine cool. They spilled like 20,000 gallons of oil, and he shut the plant down. So they also know that there was two workers at that same plant who left and then started fighting for ISIS.
Oh, jeez.
That happened in Belgium with the bombings there. They had to evacuate all the non-essential personnel from the Doel reactors for fear that one of their insiders would commit an act of sabotage because they haven't properly vetted their workers for security purposes.
What would be one of the most damaging things at a power plant like that? To drop a bomb on top of it? To blow something up inside of it? What would you do?
Well, there's different types of attacks. So an insider, the easiest one for him to do is disable a major safety system or control panels, and you could do this with a popsicle stick. I used to have this discussion, going back to the 80s, with a fellow named Carlisle Michelson, who worked with the Tennessee Valley authorities and the Nuclear Regulatory Commission and the Advisory Committee on Reactor Safeguards. And we sort of would have a little contest trying to figure out some very clever ways to sabotage a nuclear plant, because that's how we could discover what defenses we would recommend.
Sure, to teach people, yeah.
And so if someone were to put a popsicle stick in a relay switch so that when it closes, it doesn't conduct the electricity, you've just disabled a safety system, and the chances are nobody would find that under routine activities at a nuclear plant as a worker.
Unbelievable. That simple.
It is.
That's sad.
Things like that have been tried. There's been more than 150 acts of insider sabotage mostly designed to disrupt plant operations, not to cause a meltdown or a radioactive release. But there's been it's about 10 years ago in Florida, where somebody poured glue into the backup switches on a control panel, a backup control panel. They glued these lock switches shut.
On purpose, obviously. It wasn't a mistake. Hold on for a second, Scott. We're going to come back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, next hour, we'll take your phone calls with Scott Portzline as we talk about the possibility of sabotage at nuke plants. Boy, let's hope not, but we're going to talk about that and take your calls next hour on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back. We're with Scott Portzline as we talk about the possibility of nuclear sabotage. Scott, so in Florida at a nuke plant, somebody dumped glue in the system?
Yeah, they were definitely getting even with the company, and they did it on a backup control panel so they didn't interrupt with the normal operation. But if you know who did it, you get a $10,000 reward because that person was never caught.
They may still be working there, huh?
Oh, very possibly. There are definitely some other incidents here in the United States that were rather disturbing. And someone disabled a major portion of the cooling system at the Beaver Valley nuclear plant years ago. And some people actually think that the Three Mile Island accident involved sabotage. I'm one of them. That's why I did so much research on that. And the initiating event was never explained fully. In fact, the President's Commission called in the FBI to do a sabotage investigation, and they refused to do it because they said there wasn't enough evidence, but there was actually some mix-up with the communications between them and some people from the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. Just a couple of years ago in California at the San Onofre plant, one of the workers sabotaged the emergency diesel generators by pouring engine coolant into the oil reserve. And the FBI was not able to catch who did that.
Jeez.
At another plant in Turkey Point.
You would think you'd have cameras all over the place.
Well, they should have that. They have them watching mostly the outside and the doors, but they don't have that. And they don't have what's called a two-man rule. So like in missile silos, we have two men.
Yep.
They have to turn keys. Well, workers, you would double your cost of labor at the nuclear plant, so that'd be expensive. But then you would have each other watching the back and watching somebody from doing deviant behaviors. They supposedly have these programs in place to catch people who are unstable, yet even after they've been caught, sometimes they're allowed to continue working there, as happened at Three Mile Island, where one of the workers there broke into a woman's home, did some perverted sexual acts in her home, got caught, and was ordered to wear an ankle bracelet to be monitored by the courts, and he was still allowed to work at Three Mile Island.
So unbelievable.
You tell me if we're safe or not.
Jeez. What percent, in terms of our utilization of energy, electricity, what percent is nuclear, what percent is coal? Where do we stand there?
I can only tell you that nuclear represents 20% of the electric power in the United States. And that's going to be dropping soon as some of these plants can't compete with the renewables. So the good news is the renewables don't need the security guards, the long-term bank loans, the bailouts, and have all these sabotage and terrorism threats associated with it. Wind energy and solar energy efficiency is definitely ruling the day right now, but the price of even the solar panels are coming down greatly.
Yeah. Would you shut down every nuke plant right now?
No.
You would not. Why not?
I don't think we could adjust to that rapidly. I think we can phase them out. I'm not hardcore pro-nuclear, but boy, if we had another severe accident in the United States, I think every reactor of that type would be shut down. I don't think the citizens would stand for anything less than at least a temporary shutdown of that type of reactor. Now, the fact is we have, I think it's 13 reactors in the United States that are just like Fukushima, that have the same type of defect with the ventilation systems and the containment building. And yet, it's 5 years after Fukushima, the lessons that were learned by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission here in the United States have still not been given a date when they have to be enforced at the plants, they have to be enacted. incorporated into the safety signs. So, you know, initially they say, oh, we can't have a knee-jerk reaction. We need to study this. Well, that's a technique they've used for years where they just keep putting it off until they say, see, it's safe without these additional safety measures and don't make us spend the money, and people fall for it.
Well, what concerns me too, Scott, these plants that are built right on top of earthquake fault zones.
Oh, it's madness. And then in most cases, they discover even more faults right next to the plant or even underneath the plant. So we even had an earthquake shake Three Mile Island a couple of times. It was so minor that it's not an issue. But there's going to be some problems someday in the United States from nature. I foresee problems with tornadoes. We're having tornadoes all throughout the year now, it seems like.
Yeah, we are. And all over the country. You know, used to be just in the Midwest, not anymore.
That's right. I brought that up at a licensing hearing with the Nuclear Regulatory Commission about 5 years ago. And I said one thing we have to account for is the change in the weather, the atmosphere, the climate change, the amount of energy that's being stored in our atmosphere from the solar insulation, the sun. Because what's happening, these greenhouse gases retain that amount of energy. The issue of the temperature going up is not nearly as impressive. You know, if you tried to raise the temperature of your room by 1 degree, it takes a certain amount of energy. Try to do that at the Astrodome by 1 degree. It takes a lot more energy.
Sure does.
So how much energy does it take to raise the entire Earth's temperature by 1 degree? A tremendous amount of energy, and that's what we're seeing from global warming. It's the energy that's hurting us that's stored in our atmosphere and in our oceans.
Scott, what happened at the most recent nuclear summit that was held in D.C.?
Well, what they're doing is trying to gain control over weapons-grade materials and any radioactive material that could be harmful. They want to be sure that countries have in place measures to protect them, to safeguard them, to transport them safely, and to account for them. Some of these places don't have guards. Even some nuclear plants around the world don't have guards. That's just unheard of today.
That's crazy. We should have military there.
No doubt about it. That's what happened in Belgium. They put 100 military guards at the reactor. I don't know if they're still there or not, but they definitely reacted.
All right, so let's talk about the summit, though, in terms of the nations that were in attendance, those that have nukes. Did they agree on anything?
Well, they have been having success in recent years with the programs to remove some of the more dangerous ones and bring them to the United States is primarily what happens. One of the failures this year was that Russia did not participate. And there, of course, the United States and Russia are the largest nuclear proponents in the world and have the most materials. And particularly what's worrisome about Russia is with their economy in the tank, there's a lot of scientists over there that used to have a decent job and make enough money to live in a nice apartment. Can you imagine that? They didn't even have their own homes. They need to make some money, and so they're going to possibly sell secrets and even sell nuclear materials. So there is some trafficking that's been going on with several thousand incidents of radioactive materials on the black market around the world. They usually come through Italy and Spain.
So let's talk about dirty bombs for a little bit, Scott. Explain what a dirty bomb is.
A dirty bomb is actually a pretty simple device in the sense that it is a conventional explosive. Wrapped around it will be some radioactive materials in the form of metal or possibly a metallic powder. And the danger is if you disperse this radioactivity, it can really disrupt a city. It can cause illnesses. If it's a very particular type of radioactive, and I'm not going to say what it would be, there could be fragments embedded into people from the explosion who are close to the explosive.
How much material do you need in order to do significant damage?
It depends on the isotope again. But when you're talking about, well, I'll give you an example. The last week or 2 weeks ago in Texas, a package fell off a truck right outside of Houston in LaPorte, Texas. It contained two 100 curie soils. sources of iridium-192, which is a very dangerous isotope. Those two sources alone could have killed hundreds of people if they were forced to remain close by in their presence. And a dirty bomb, it might kill some people a few years down the line when the cancer set in, but it might make them very sick initially. The cleanup involved would be maybe $333 billion.
Wow. That would break a nation just for that. And that would be a small area, right?
Yes. And it would be the economic disruption combined with the proper cleanup. So I have seen documents, and the discussion is that it would break a nation, and that therefore they will create a public relations campaign to do a partial cleanup to a point that they think is acceptable to society, and then convince them with stats and so forth that it's safe to return to work or to live in that area again.
Every time a bomb goes off somewhere in Europe or the Middle East, do they come out there with radiation detectors to see if there was a dirty bomb involved?
Well, definitely in some of the countries. I know they do that in Israel. I just had a discussion with the Harrisburg City Council a couple of months ago that each time the emergency responders go to a highway accident or any type of emergency to turn on their Geiger counters. They have them on the fire trucks. They have them, and they don't use them because they're assuming nothing's going to go wrong. Well, there's a lost or stolen source of radioactivity in the United States every other day. So it's happening quite often.
What got you interested in this?
Well, I was in Thule, Greenland when the Three Mile Island meltdown occurred. And when we came home, that was the scene of another nuclear accident. In this case, in 1979, some of the Navy SEAL divers, well, maybe they weren't SEALs. I know the Seabees were there. They were diving through the ice 7 miles from the air base to look for what was left over from a B-52 that crashed and dropped 4 hydrogen bombs. One of them burned and fell through the ice, they think, and may have laid on the ocean floor. Well, it's classified whether or not they found that, but I was there in 1979 when they were making an attempt to find that, and the History Channel asked me for some photos that I had of the decompression chambers that the divers were using back in the at the base in one of the aircraft hangars. So when I came home from Greenland, some of my friends were saying there were some newspaper articles saying that sabotage might have been involved with this so-called accident, and that it was actually predicted a few months beforehand that a cult had some workers at the plant and were going to disable some systems and cause an accident. Well, I thought that was just a bunch of baloney, but I'd never forgot it. 5 years later, I'm reading a newspaper, and it turns out this cult did get arrested. And I thought, oh, my goodness, I'm going to go to the public document rooms and look into that because I was interested. And I went to the library, and within half an hour, I found that the President's Commission did request a sabotage investigation and that there were some very suspicious events. There's about 11 of them that were never explained, including hand wheels pulled off of the valves and wires disconnected from the very spot that the troubles began. And by the way, the troubles began to the minute of the one-year anniversary of startup, which was a very suspicious event among some of the original investigators. So I met with some of them who support my research and actually believe that I am onto something with that. And I like conspiracy theories, and a lot of them are
real.
Yeah, I was going to say a lot of them are ridiculous, but there's a lot of real ones, too. Yep. And you just can't write this fiction. It's in the hearts of some evil men to do things like this.
Scott, in 1975, a book came out by John Fuller called We Almost Lost Detroit about the 1966 partial meltdown of the nuclear power plant near the Detroit area. I was 16 years old. I was living there. I don't remember hearing that story. They kept it quiet for a long time until Fuller really wrote that book and it got it. But it should have been a wake-up call back in 1966, and it wasn't.
Well, they did install some additional surveillance equipment on the reactors to listen for parts that may be loose in a system. And I don't know what kind of luck they've had with that, but what's going on right now at the Indian Point nuclear reactor outside of New York is that there's some bolts missing. It's about 200, I think it's 227 bolts are defective or missing inside the reactor that holds some...
How could they be missing?
Well, they would have corroded over the years from the high temperatures.
And just disintegrated?
Yeah, and then come apart and then get pulled through with the pumps, pumping large amounts of water. And what happened at Detroit, where a piece of metal got stuck on one of the, well, tubings for the reactor, it interrupted the flow of the coolant. That's why you almost lost Detroit. You almost had that meltdown that was uncorrectable. The same thing possibly could happen at Indian Point. And so there's some politicians right now, including former Governor Cuomo, calling for the shutdown, the permanent shutdown, because the risk associated with losing that reactor are enormous when you compare how much population is next to that reactor.
Jeez, it's just frightening. I mean, is the danger of a problem at a nuke plant countrywide in just one area, or does it just hurt that, you know, geographical area?
Pretty much it's the geographical area. The plumes can travel very far. For instance, the Fukushima particles were detected here in Pennsylvania, but they probably didn't do any harm. Now, statistically, we might see a bump on that would prove those particles went around the world, just like with Chernobyl. But it can render an area, the old line from the movie, the China Syndrome, the size of the state of Pennsylvania. There's been recent documents and studies done by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission called SORCA. It was an accident investigation, what would happen, and boy, did they misrepresent the findings in that. And I attended a meeting where some of the people who created the computer programs were there from Los Alamos Laboratories. Their heads were hanging. I tore them apart with their own documentation and their own problems associated with trying to understand what goes on in a meltdown situation. They can't predict that. It's too complex. We don't have computers or understandings that can come up with some sort of reenactment scenario.
How much material do you need in terms of, you know, size, would it take to really cause some damage?
You mean a nuclear plant or a radioactive?
Like a dirty bomb. I mean, the size of a grapefruit, that kind of material, smaller, bigger?
Well, some of these sources, like the uridium-192, bread box. We'll go with the bread box. Yeah, it doesn't take a lot. And, of course, depending on the dispersal, if you do it above a city, you have more dispersal than if you do it at ground level. And, you know, it's just things I really don't want to give too many hints on.
No, I understand. But you know what? They probably know, Scott, don't they?
I know. It's just I agree with that. I just don't like to get accused any more than I do now of giving people ideas.
No, I understand. But could, and we won't give out that information, but could an average person, if they listened to you, if you gave out something specific, could they do that? I mean, you just don't walk down the street and pick up some, you know, plutonium or uranium.
No, but it's doable. I had the occasion, maybe this was 10 years ago, I actually called the Nuclear Regulatory Commission to shut down their website portal, which had documents that showed a terrorist, without leaving his home, doing it on his computer, where dangerous materials were stored, what address, what room, you know, what building, what room, what floor, what desk, what drawer, how much was there, and whether or not security was in place. And when ABC News was about to air that, they shut down their website that day. Now, they wouldn't have had to shut their website if they had listened to it for the years beforehand. But they waited until they were embarrassed, and then they shut everything down, which was unfair to anybody who was trying to monitor safety.
Scott, we're going to talk some more next hour. Plus, we'll take phone calls from people concerned about this incredible topic. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.